The cryptocurrency revolution is sending shockwaves through geopolitics. This is Brief Before Impact. Welcome, everyone. I am Matt Parker, and thank you for joining me this evening. Today's brief is going to be discussing the impact the cryptocurrency and number of its forms is having on geopolitical relations between countries and as well as non-government actors. Diving into this research, I found it so compelling, especially the post-invasion of Russia into Ukraine and how China is maneuvering its policies in order to avoid certain sanctions if it were to ever incur them in the future, and how what role cryptocurrency plays in that. So we're going to discuss that as well as what America is doing and potentially some future outcomes. Before we jump into all of it, let me take a quick ad break and then we'll get to work. Now, welcome back, everybody. Let me just start off with a very brief introduction, a little bit of an informational definition of what cryptocurrency is. This isn't a holistic review of what it is, more or less just a couple of bullet points to get us all on the same page. And this is according to Investopedia.com. What is cryptocurrency? A cryptocurrency is a digital or virtual currency that is secured by cryptography, which makes it nearly impossible to counterfeit or double spend. Many cryptocurrencies are decentralized networks based on blockchain technology, which is a distributed ledger enforced by disparate network of computers. A defining feature of cryptocurrencies is that they are generally not issued by any central authority, like a government, for example, rendering them theoretically immune to government interference or manipulation. So a few key takeaways. A cryptocurrency is a form of digital asset based on a network that is distributed across a large number of computers. This decentralized structure allows them to exist outside the government or the control of governments and central authorities. Some experts believe that blockchain and related technology will disrupt many industries, including finance and law. The advantages of cryptocurrencies include cheaper and faster money transfers and decentralized systems that do not collapse at a single point of failure. The disadvantages of cryptocurrencies include their price volatility, high energy consumption for mining activities, and use in criminal activities. So this is a brief, quick overview of what cryptocurrencies are. I hope you notice that the part of cryptocurrencies, what the foundation of what makes them possible, is something called blockchain technology, which we're not going to cover tonight by any means. It's a whole subject to itself. However, it reveals that there are a number of items available to the United States from a competitive standpoint, and we're going to dive into a number of those later on. But I want to highlight essentially what we can evaluate in recent geopolitical events and the role that cryptocurrency has played. And I'm going to talk about two in particular. Obviously, like I mentioned at the intro, the invasion, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And then I'm going to highlight China's Belt Road Initiative, which you've heard me talk about in many past episodes, and how they're using cryptocurrency and potentially what their Belt Road Initiative could fast forward and emphasize cryptocurrencies in a more global type of manner. So let me start off with discussing Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I'm just highlighting how the breakdown of their government moving into martial law after the invasion allowed for cryptocurrencies to really flourish in terms of donations from outside sources. Highlighting some data here from Maria Nunes of the Geopolitics. And she writes that last year, Ukraine had adopted an open stance towards cryptocurrencies based on its expanding tech industry. The vast potential of the industry has ended up interconnected with cryptocurrencies due to the growing adoption throughout the years driven by the surge of peer-to-peer platforms, indicating a strong grassroots adoption of the tool. In fact, Ukraine had registered the fourth highest volume of cryptocurrency use worldwide, making it as one of the main emerging hubs globally, according to on-chain analysis. It is not a surprise, then, to see that the months leading up to the conflict, Ukraine legalized cryptocurrencies as legitimate digital assets. This meant that Ukrainians had much more freedom within the law to explore cryptocurrencies through legal means instead of a gray area. The result of the cryptocurrency laws and the tensions with Russia were the reason for increasing adoption of cryptocurrencies in daily lives that eventually overtook the use of the fiat inside the Ukraine as a whole. This existing phenomena proved invaluable to the citizens once Russia finally invaded and martial law was implemented, which suspended the issuance of foreign currency as well as the replenishment of e-wallets with digital currency. While most traditional wallets connected to banks were frozen, the suspension through the implementation of martial law did not affect cryptocurrencies, as the whole payment system itself runs parallel to the traditional financial system. In fact, the widespread adoption of cryptocurrencies during times of conflict reveals the technical resilience of blockchains against cyber warfare. Cryptocurrencies rely on the technology of blockchain and an interconnected decentralized worldwide computer system in order to secure transactions. While it is an energy-intensive endeavor, the level of security that it provides is unparalleled, as in order to disrupt the entire system, one would need to conduct a 51% attack on the network, which is functionally impossible in established blockchains such as Bitcoin and Ethereum due to the high energy and computing power used. Comparatively speaking, traditional banking systems are easily taken down by simple cyber attacks like distributed denial of service attacks, which have occurred in the past and have already occurred in Ukraine as well. This means that the use of traditional banking tools is not viable during the periods of conflict due to their weakness in cyber attacks. Additionally, cryptocurrencies also have the technical ability to conduct transactions offline through the use of mesh networks, which adds another point of resilience to the network. The resilience of cryptocurrency network, along with the flexibility of global interconnection, caught the attention of the Ukrainian government, who set up the wallet addresses to receive Bitcoin, Ethereum, USDT, stablecoin, and Polkadot as donations. And since the posting of those wallet addresses, Ukraine has received over $20 million in those cryptocurrencies. I found personally that the invasion of Ukraine by Russia was going to be peppered with cyber attacks, as typically this is how so many new conflicts are proceeding, especially with powers like Russia, China, North Korea, etc., that have a pretty robust hacking ability. And the examples listed here by Nunes points out the fact that cryptocurrencies were able to survive essentially the downfall of Ukrainian society as it moved from regular society into more martial law. And the challenge that I imagine other future conflicts will see, especially as you've heard me talk about so much in the past, that I believe any large-scale conflict will be initiated by a cyber attack, is in fact, how can commerce continue? How can the movement of any types of money or goods, transactions continue, especially once a computer network, internet service provider has been dismantled by a cyber attack that we've seen? And this is how cryptocurrencies, especially highlighting the data pointed out by Nunes through the use of mesh networks, have just offered another point of resilience to the network. So if we imagine, for example, country X is invading country Y, and in order to provide some kind of monetary aid to civilians on the ground and the country being invaded, cryptocurrencies could offer a solution. Maybe not a perfect one, but certainly offer a solution to a problem in the short term, allowing people to still somehow operate as they had in their normal lives prior to that invasion. Fascinating opportunity to evaluate in real time how an invasion by a sovereign country into another, and where cryptocurrencies would be able to hold up in such a resilient type of manner. Which brings me to, not in terms of military conflict, but more in global expansion. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to be discussing China's Belt Road Initiative. Just as a quick highlight, and these are really in my own words, not a book definition, China has the desire to interconnect its markets in East Asia all the way to Europe. And it's doing so by its project titled Belt Road Initiative. And this is executed in a manner of ways, and it's literally creating physical avenues to move goods as well as digital ones and infrastructure projects, all to build up local markets, tying them back to the Chinese Communist Party. In this example of how cryptocurrency is involved, Nunes continues to highlight how the BRI project could actually be a perfect example to accelerate and more internationalize such of cryptocurrencies to being more used more commonly across the world. And she writes here that China is planning to use the Belt Road Initiative to internationalize their currency, RMB. It's an interchangeable term for the Chinese yuan. So you'll hear me mention it here in a moment. Indeed, the majority of the BRI project recipients showed interest in settling cross-border transaction using RMB. And this is where the digital yuan comes in. According to the researcher, Mahima Dugal, the BRI is, quote, a perfect mechanism for accelerating the international use of a digital yuan, end quote. So in many developing countries, banking infrastructure is severely lacking, and transactions can take weeks. The digital yuan bypasses any third-party banks or local institutions and practically eliminates fees while executing transactions instantly. Stanley Chow, an expert on business in Asia, says that many countries within BRI would jump at the idea of adopting a digital yuan. Another facet of the BRI is the Digital Silk Road, which aims to export Chinese technology to BRI participants, including high-speed internet, artificial intelligence, and mobile payment systems similar to China's own Alipay. With Chinese technology comes Chinese control, as many technology firms in China are only nominally in the private sector. With greater control of the country's digital infrastructure and widespread use of digital yuan, De Gaulle writes that China could even, quote, rewire the financial networks, end quote, in countries heavily involved with the BRI. China's BRI is primarily a foreign policy outreach program aimed at developing new allies and gaining influence in emerging markets. But for a project as ambitious as currency hegemony, China is also turning to old allies to help implement an international CBDC. A majority of countries that are members of the International Monetary Fund, IMF, are currently investigating a CBDC or have already developed one. Many of these CBDCs are limited to domestic use, but China is one of the first countries seriously evaluating cross-border transactions using CBDC, a crucial first step towards global adoption. So their experimentation has spawned the multiple CBDC bridge project, which was a collaboration between four jurisdictions, the following: China, Hong Kong, Thailand, and the UAE. And that aims to create infrastructure to facilitate efficient, low-cost transfers between CBDCs while respecting existing regulations and privacy norms within each jurisdiction. The project identified 15 use cases of CBDC transfers between countries, including commercial payments, wealth management, bond issuance, trade settlements, and supply chain financing. Several financial institutions participating in that multiple CBDCs as Goldman Sachs, HSBC in the United Kingdom, UBS in Switzerland. These are based in Western economies, and this potentially indicates a broader reach for collaboration than simply Chinese allies and regional banks. So lastly, international sanctions present a unique opportunity for China to showcase the advantages of a currency outside the U.S. control. When Russia invaded Ukraine, one way the United States retaliated was by cutting Russia off from the Society for Worldwide International Financial Interbank Financial Telecommunication, with the acronym is SWIFT. SWIFT is responsible for nearly all international cross-border transactions. As 95% of all dollar payments were settled in New York, SWIFT is policed by the United States. And the White House vowed that without SWIFT, Russia would be reliant on, quote, telephone or the fax machine to conduct international business. The digital yuan offers a potential solution. By bypassing SWIFT and executing a secure cross-border transfer using China's CBDC, Russia could theoretically trade with anyone willing to run afoul of U.S. sanctions. If China itself were the target of widespread sanctions, the digital yuan could be crucial to continuing trade relations with close allies. China could also pitch the digital yuan to any countries seeking to disrupt U.S. hegemony, such as an ally, its ally, Iran. More support for the digital yuan increases its reach and recognition, in turn boosting the internalization of the Chinese yuan. So with that laid out, we highlighted how China's Belt Road Initiative could facilitate and expedite the use of a digital yuan, a digital currency, controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. You've heard me talk a lot in the past, more recent episodes, that is, of China's ambitions to retake Taiwan. And rather than treating it as this broken-off province doing its own thing, they're going to bring it back into the fold. Obviously, China and Russia are very close allies. China has evaluated and viewed Russia being cut off and becoming an international pariah, cut off from the international trade system, you know, SWIFT, which is what we talked about a moment ago. China wants to avoid that in the event they decide to retake Taiwan in a more forceful military campaign. How are they going to do that? The digital yuan could be the answer to that solution. China doesn't have the luxury of being cut off from the global markets as Russia has, even though Russia's been able to still maintain and stay afloat to a degree. That being said, China is not the same type of economy that Russia is, not even apples to apples. So the Chinese yuan, a digital currency controlled by Beijing, could allow essentially an invasion, military invasion of China into Taiwan, and allowing China to avoid any type of economic sanctions as Russia has incurred. And this is a tremendous problem because economic sanctions are one of America's and the West kind of go-to deterrents because it is not it's not a conflict. No one's getting shot at with economic sanctions. It's a way you can slap the wrist of an actor doing something you don't want them to. Well, a digital yuan might allow China to avoid any type of pain from the West. Where does this take us? What kind of future could we imagine with digital currencies, and how could they affect any type of geopolitical decision made by regional or global actors? Again, according to Nunes, and she writes that current point in time, the U.S. dollar is poised to lose its dominance as the international trade currency. The share of dollar reserves held by central banks have already been steadily falling since the creation of the euro at the end of the 20th century. Combative foreign policy, along with the overbearing use of economic sanctions as a weapon, has incentivized countries to look for alternatives in order to further their own economic interest. Yet, as the competition for the newest hegemonic currency begins, it would be prudent for the countries to question if an attachment to the traditional financial market is even viable for international trade. The weaponization of the international payment system is a risk that all players face when dealing with a hegemonic power. As shown by Iran's and Russia's ejection from the SWIFT system, participation in the international trade system is bound by specific rules that are not often dictated by the powers that dominate the financial system. More often than not, it means that the architecture in place favors countries whose interests align with the global interest, and that interest is invariably dictated by the power that created the architecture in the first place. Therefore, states to engage in debates on whether joining a fully decentralized system to safeguard their own ambitions or create their own payment system to compete with others. So while payment centralization is an attractive model to even control citizens domestically, such as the case in Canada with the trucker's convoy, the case of a Russo-Ukrainian war should demonstrate that a decentralized finance gives flexible economic backbone to defend against digital-empowered economic attacks. These points that Nunes has made is really arguing, in my view, from the case of more the individual, at the individual level, the benefit perhaps of the individual citizens. You know, in the case of, we've seen with Ukrainian citizens being able to semi-operate via the power of cryptocurrencies, as compared to a more regional power, allowing a country whose interests might not be aligned with the powers that control the architecture of the international trade system. Perhaps a digital, decentralized financial system would be to their benefit. So this really is a strong message for those countries that don't have the power in a kind of more asymmetric manner, can create their own infrastructure to allow trade despite what the global powers say. I did find it fascinating, though, during all this talk about cryptocurrencies, both on political sides of the aisle, at least in the United States, on the right and the left, there's proponents on both sides, that often a bit of a left curve with the discussion so much of climate change that continues to ongoing, kind of a very strong narrative that there needs to be a solution. Irony about, at least it's ironic to me, that those who favor cryptocurrencies also claim that climate change is the greatest threat to mankind. Reading by a news report written by an article from Columbia University highlighting the energy consumption that cryptocurrencies requires. The article goes on to say that crypto has a little dirty secret that's very relevant to the world. It uses a lot of energy. Well, how much energy? Bitcoin, the world's largest cryptocurrency, currently consumes an estimated 150 terawatt hours of electricity annually. And this is more than the entire country of Argentina, which has a population of 45 million people. So producing that energy emits some 65 megatons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere every year. That's comparable to the emissions of Greece, the country, making crypto a significant contributor to global air pollution and climate change. So there's never just a clean answer to geopolitics and trying to avoid the systems that are created by the global powers. Certainly there's a challenge from the infrastructure that certain countries don't have, but they're trying to produce in order to avoid certain economic sanctions that, again, are all too favorable as an answer to or kind of a threat to those countries who are not acting as, whether it's the United States or other Western countries would have them. That despite that, economic sanctions and cryptocurrencies being favored by both sides of the political aisle still contribute a tremendous amount of pollution to the atmosphere, creating another issue, whether it's it's climate change. So what has the United States done after I've mentioned the use of cryptocurrencies by actors, individuals in Ukraine, and certainly how China would like to seek avoiding economic sanctions by the United States in the future with their own digital yuan, what America should do and what have we done? Well, the Biden administration has an executive order to develop a national policy on cryptocurrency and digital assets. And it's an important first step to setting up some guardrails around the global market that reached more than $3 trillion last year, according to Wharton Legal Studies and Business Ethics Professor Kevin Warbuck. The executive order issued in early March calls for government agencies to coordinate on six key priorities. They are protecting consumers and investors, preserving financial stability, mitigating risk from illegal digital assets, promoting American competitiveness, ensuring financial inclusion, and guiding responsible innovation. This is a challenge on how does a government regulate something that is kind of designed to not be regulated. And in my view, where the United States should be pursuing in terms of like public policy is, at the end of the day, our country and our government should be creating a framework and guardrails, yes, for innovation to thrive and America to outcompete other countries. You've always heard my one bias I am overt on regarding this podcast is I just want America to win. I am pro-America in that regard. So whether it's a digital currency, which is reliant on blockchain technology, my viewpoint is how do we encourage the brilliant American innovators that we have and incentivize them to create the finest blockchain technology in the world to outcompete our adversaries and competitors? That's where I see the America government could play a role in facilitating kind of this revolution of how countries exchange goods and trade between each other. There are a lot of unknowns of how this will all play out, I believe, in my assessment, between countries, whether that's purely between allies and how digital currencies will play a role there, but even more with more volatility in the future between countries, how economic sanctions might lose their damage as they have done in the past, and if they're able to be avoided by such things as cryptocurrencies in the future. As always, I hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. And I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.